Laudato Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Friday, May 27th, bishops encourage support for Christian communities in Jerusalem and throughout the Holy Land. The fighting continues in Ukraine as the world marks the 25th anniversary of the NATO-Russia agreement that ended the Cold War, and armed assailants killed dozens of people in an attack in the east of Burkina Faso. In the Vatican, I'm Father Benedict Mayaki. The Coordination of Bishops' Conferences in Support of the Church in the Holy Land, better known as the Holy Land Coordination, has released a statement following the conclusion on Thursday of their annual solidarity pilgrimage to Israel and Palestine. In the communique, the bishops uphold the rightful place of the Christian community in Jerusalem's identity, but say its continued presence is threatened by occupation and injustice. They also highlight the poverty they witnessed during their visit, and they say, which they say has been compounded by the pandemic. As pilgrims return once more to the region, the bishops' coordination is calling on them to support Christians in Jerusalem and throughout the Holy Land. Bishop Declan Lang, chair of the Holy Land Coordination, reflects on the visit and says he witnessed signs of hope.
It's always been stressed with the coordination group that we're not just visitors, we come in as pilgrims. It's part of our faith journey, our relationship with God, and recognising that our relationship with God is enriched by our meeting of the people of the Holy Land. They open our eyes to messages of the gospel, which our eyes are perhaps closed to due to differences in society. They're very much people who suffer and who carry the cross and perhaps have glimpses of the resurrection. They make us think about our own lifestyle and how that is an expression of the crucifixion and resurrection. In past years, when we've left the coordination group, have left feeling rather downcast and feeling nothing is really improving. But the patriarch put forward a vision that is new and can be exciting. The problem would be put it into practice, that those people who have got a vested interest in the present setup will probably oppose him. But I think he's a person who's a strong leader, and he will persevere and he will make real what his vision is. Signs of hope, I think, are the Christian community is a very small community, but it excels in its activities, especially of charity towards people and social welfare and education. We pull more than our weight, and that's always a sign of hope. And that also that the Christian community is pledged, really, to make this place a sacred place, a place of dialogue and peace.
That was Bishop Declan Lang, chair of the Holy Land Coordination. Archbishop Vincenzo Palio, the president of the Pontifical Academy for Life, will bless a new sculpture entitled Life Monument on Sunday in Rome. The bronze statue, by Canadian artist Tim Schmaltz, depicts the Blessed Virgin Mary with the unborn Christ child. Christopher Wells tells us more.
Canadian artist Timothy Paul Schmaltz, known especially for his Angels Unaware sculpture of migrants and refugees in St. Peter's Square, and for his lifelike homeless Jesus statues in cities throughout the world, has unveiled his latest work, a sculpture depicting the Blessed Virgin Mary with the unborn Christ child in her womb. The new statue, donated by the Movimento per la Vita Italiano, the Italian Movement for Life, is being blessed this Sunday in Rome by Archbishop Vincenzo Paglia, the president of the Pontifical Academy for Life. The blessing is taking place at a time of growing awareness of the need to protect the most vulnerable lives, says a press release announcing the event. Archbishop Paglia explains, "We are talking about the commitment for the woman and her partner to receive all possible support to prevent abortion, overcoming all the poor conditions, including financial, that sadly lead to the termination of a pregnancy." Mr. Schmaltz agrees, saying, "Now more than ever, with the debate underway in the United States, the sculpture, which is in Rome and also in the USA, is even more meaningful." In addition to the statue in the Roman Church of San Marcello a Corso in the city's historic center, a sister sculpture will be permanently installed in Washington, D.C., after short stays in several other U.S. cities. "It is a celebration and also a persuasion," Mr. Schmaltz says, of his work, adding, "I want to use art to persuade people and to remind everyone that life is beautiful." I'm Christopher Wells.
Battles rage in eastern Ukraine as the world remembers the 25th anniversary of a crucial agreement between the NATO military alliance and Russia that helped ease east-west tensions after the Cold War. But as regional correspondent Stefan Borsch reports, decades later, the two sides face a dangerous confrontation.
The NATO-Russia Founding Act, signed on May 27, 1997, long ensured cooperation between the military alliance and Moscow. But on Friday, the two sides edged closer to a direct confrontation. Several sources say NATO troops are even active in Ukraine to back the Ukrainian army in its battle against Russia's military. Despite these efforts, the Prime Minister of NATO member Britain, Boris Johnson, acknowledged that Russian President Vladimir Putin is making progress in the eastern Donbas region, Ukraine's industrial heartland.
I'm afraid that Putin, at great cost to himself and to Russian military, is continuing to chew through ground in Donbass. He's continuing to make gradual, slow, but I'm afraid palpable progress. And therefore, it is absolutely vital that we continue to support the Ukrainians militarily.
His comments came as Russian-backed separatists claimed Friday to have taken control of the city of Lyman in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk area, which is part of the Donbas region. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned that Donbas could be emptied of its population amid relentless Russian shelling and deportations. He says the current offensive by the occupiers in the Donbas could make the region uninhabited. They want to turn the towns of Popashna, Bakhmut, Lyman, Lysychansk and Severodonetsk into smoldering ashes, like they did with the towns of Volnovka and Mariupol. All this, including the deportation of our people and the mass killings of civilians, is an obvious policy of genocide pursued by Russia. Clashes also continue elsewhere, including around Ukraine's second largest city, Kharkiv, in the country's northeast. President Zelensky says Kharkiv was also hit, killing at least 9 people, including a 5-month-old child and the father, while nearly 24 people were injured. The president said attacks continue elsewhere in the region as well and the country south. Additionally, at least 10 people reportedly died and more than 30 were injured overnight in the eastern Dnipro area. Officials said 3 missiles launched from Russia struck a military base there. For Vatican Radio, I am Stefan Bos, reporting.
Still on Ukraine, more than 4,000 civilians have been killed in the country since Russia's invasion began on the 24th of February, the UN Rights Office said in a statement on Friday, noting that the true number is likely much higher. In total, 4,031 people have been killed, including nearly 200 children, according to the OHCHR, which has dozens of monitors in the country. Most were killed by explosive weapons with a wide impact, such as shelling from heavy artillery or airstrikes. Armed assailants on Wednesday killed dozens of civilians in the east of Burkina Faso, a country ravaged by the violent activities of extremist Islamic groups. Deborah Castellano-Lubov has that story.
At least 50 civilians were killed in the Majwari region of Burkina Faso on Wednesday during an attack by armed assailants, according to an official statement from the region's governor. News reports say the civilians were traveling to a town in the commune of Pama, close to the borders with Bene Etaugo, when the attack happened. It is not immediately clear who was behind the 25 May attack, though swathes of the country have been overrun by violent extremist religious groups in recent years. Since 2015, Burkina Faso has been facing the challenge of curbing the activities of Islamist militants linked to Al-Qaeda and the so-called Islamic State, as the countries in the region try to respond to a wider insurgency across the Sahel region of West Africa. Despite joint efforts from national and regional security operatives, the violence has expanded and has intensified in the past decade, resulting in the deaths of thousands of civilians annually and widespread displacement of people. The violence is now beginning to spread into coastal West African countries like Togo. Earlier this month, 8 soldiers were killed and 13 others injured in what is suspected to be the first deadly raid by extremist Islamic militants in Togo. Wednesday's attack also comes after 2 others this month in Madjwari. The first on 14 May killed 17 civilians, and the other on 19 May killed 11 soldiers and left several others injured. Burkina Faso recently underwent a power change after military officers ousted President Rochemark Christian Kabore in a coup in January amid a deepening security crisis in the country. The new government has vowed to improve security, but levels of violence still remain high. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
The annual Eurasian Economic Forum has taken place in Bishkek, the capital city of Kyrgyzstan. As Linda Bordoni reports, this year's forum gained significant international interest and impact as Russia's pivots to Asia and supply chain movements place Central Asia in the spotlight.
In a global perspective, this year's Eurasian Economic Forum has taken on far greater significance due to the impact of the Russia-Ukraine war and to the stringent sanctions imposed on the Kremlin in retaliation for its invasion of its neighbour. The Economic Forum is a top-level event of the Eurasian Economic Union that concentrates on regional economic and commercial issues. Member states include Armenia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, where the summit was held this year, and Russia. The chosen theme? Eurasian economic integration in the era of global changes, new opportunities for investments. Addressing the forum, the Russian president said the development of Eurasian integration has no connection to current developments or market conditions, pointing out that it was established many years ago. However, he went on to decry the sanctions imposed on his country, saying that their effects are not limited to Russia or even China, and expressed his opinion that the world is witnessing a global process which sees a growing number of countries that want to and will pursue an independent policy. Putin was not included in the World Economic Forum that took place in Davos, Switzerland, from the 22nd to the 26th of May, the closing day of which coincided with the Kyrgyzstan event. Several discussion sessions were held within the framework Strategy 2025, forming a vision of the EA-EU future, new areas and directions of cooperation. Talks focused on the further liberalisation and commonality of trade, tariffs and customs regulations between each of the member states and countries with which the EA-EU has free trade agreements. One of the issues pinpointed was the fact that the bloc has suffered in the past from a lack of coordination in trade, quality and standardisation issues. The sessions dedicated to projecting Eurasianism into the future focused on a more abstract view of what Eurasianism really means. Is it Central Asia? Does it include the entire landmass from China to the European Union? And finally, interaction between the EA-EU and international partners and how to develop it. I'm Linda Bordoni.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, go to our web portal at www.vaticannews.va. My thanks go to Bruno Orti in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.